housing and retail. As far as the entertainment leisure side, since being in a mountain town, ski town, Crested Butte is a ski area. It's recently been acquired by Vail Resorts 2 years ago, or this past went, yeah, 2 years ago. And so we're impacted with shutdowns there, but I'll go into this and we'll get to Q&A. So Chopwood Mercantile was a culmination of various different ideas I had from owning previously another kind of outdoor retail store that was, I would equate it to a local REI. We did bike, ski, hike, everything. And then after I wound up having to sell that in the last downturn economy, I did wind up out in California helping operations with a startup mountain bike company. And that's where I met Greg and kind of wanted, I had these concepts to do a new retail store while I owned the Alpineer. However, we wound up having to sell it. And so Chopwood Mercantile is started with that. One of the things you'll see on here, this is a presentation that I did 2 years ago. I've added to it this morning. And at the time we were a B Corp certification. Don't want to dive too deep into B Corp, but we were the first outdoor retail store that was B Corp certified. And if you look up B Corp certification, it's a very strenuous certification that looks at how you treat your employees, how you work within your community, and you know, sustainability, and et cetera. Ben & Jerry's is a B Corp. Unilever has a whole bunch of B Corp companies and small businesses. So we are no longer a B Corp certification. I'll get into that in a second. Store's name, Chopwood Mercantile. We're here. We did a proof of concept here in Crested Butte, Colorado. That picture on the left is actually where I'm sitting right now. That is not today. That was a few winters ago. And so we've taken kind of decades of retail and merging with the concept of public house with a bit of an old school friendly mercantile. The store's name was actually developed from a friend of mine who is a artist, designer, and actually a master's in fine arts and et cetera. He said, you should name it Chopwood Mercantile after this proverb that I did not know at the time. It's before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And basically what that means to us is that no matter what, you're always chopping wood and carrying water. So it's living day-to-day life. On the foundation, we opened in May of 2015, B Corp certified in 2017. We did this as a proof of concept in a 900 square foot store with the intent to open more locations. We donate over 2% of our revenue to local nonprofits. Some of our key brands are a Patagonia partner brand. They do over 50% of our business. Filson, Rourke, Purnell, Farm to Feet, Chopwood, branded products, Holzbrook, Hella, et cetera. This was our pitch deck when we were, before we even launched. A lot of design thinking went into how we developed this retail store. And, you know, as I was talking to Greg on those long travels on 405, I really knew that retail was at a pivot point. And this was back in 2010, where it needed to be experiential. We were seeing big box downturn. I foreshadowed online kind of having a dip. There was some struggle. So our thing was to take experiences we had outside of retail and bring it to the outdoor retail market. So, you know, most outdoor retailers at the time were all about the extremes and not really talking to the people that did most of the purchasing. That's kind of a look at what our store looks like. We curated, it's got old barn wood in it. We're in a building built in the late 1800s and share space. Kind of behind us is a Asian restaurant, and then above us is a offices and things. So 1800s building that was redone in 2006. We're in a historic zone, so it's very controlled on what they can do. These are kind of our core beliefs. I won't read them all off to you. They are on our website, but this is the foundation of who we are. You know, so chop wood for us is our craft for growth, risk, and creativity. We're about creating and cultivating relationships. We're not just about selling product. I do co-own it with my wife, Lisa, and we currently have two part-time employees that help us out as needed. It's very seasonal here. like I said, this, I kept the slide in, and it was a, from before when I did a talk at something called A Million Cups, which is all over the world. It's kind of a quick business talks that we did at the university here. And we have an incubator and startup at a university down in Gunnison, Colorado. But this was our goal at the time, was to build, to be here, build a brand regionally, then nationally, and potentially worldwide, increase our revenues, increase our own product line. We were working on products from Guatemala, Oaxaca, and looking for a partner village and expanding locations and creating a travel aspect. We decided in 2019 to do a pivot. Sorry, I'm waving to people as they walk by me on the street. We are no longer a B Corp. And the reasoning is we really follow the foundations of it, but B Corp is really intended for large organizations. And then for our size, it's going to cost us about $1,200 every year to re-up it just to have that title. And we've gone through the certification, and we still have those in our bylaws because you're required to add them to your corporate structure. And so we decided to apply that money to local nonprofits instead of keeping that up. And at that time, the reason behind that was we decided also to not expand. We were looking at a growth projection, and commercial space was getting at an all-time high. There isn't in retail the ability to just increase product pricing. Everything's set from the brands. So there isn't a way to kind of deal with the increase we saw in commercial real estate. So we couldn't make it work. So we just decided to focus on the small local store, no longer in expansion mode. And our goals were really to reduce our debt and work on an exit strategy. However, as we all know, what happened, COVID reality has hit. And let's just say it's a roller coaster of emotions by the minute here, especially in our town. Our town holds a lot of passion. We have a lot of passionate entrepreneurs. We have second homeowners we rely on. And kind of the timeline here is March 14th, Vail Resorts closes all ski areas. The day before, they had told people spring break was still on, and that was the start of our spring break season. Right around when Vail closed, our governor here in Colorado also said any non-Vail owned resorts also had to close. March 16th, Gunnison County ordered all non-essential businesses, retail, restaurants, lodging, basically everything to shut down. That was ahead of anyone else in the state beyond the ski areas. We were hit early here and hard with COVID. More than 50% of the people I know got sick. We had a testing issue. There wasn't testing. Gunnison is 25 miles away. That's where the hospital is. And the communities are really split between Gunnison and Crested Butte, are called the Gunnison Valley. There's a free bus that goes back and forth. So it's really one community. We were quickly gained the title of top six in the nation per capita. So we had a serious issue going on that, you know, New York City and other places have been dealing with past us. It's turning around and doing a little bit looking back, it looks like COVID hit here starting December. So with that closure, we were like, okay, what do we do? We rely on those last 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks of ski season. Normally it was going to close mid-April this year. And we typically shut down during off season from April until first part of May. But that's our time when we sell excess inventory from the spring season. We had an online presence previously that was pretty extensive. And then we had backed away and gone to just doing our own branded items because of the competition in that level. And we really focus on in-person experiences. So in April, by the end of March, we had all our sale inventory in line. We went into cash flow mode. It's how can we move inventory, losing profit, and kind of pivot. So we were allowed to do local pickup here and delivery. We did that and shipping, and the community really rallied from our second homeowners, our guests that come here, and really helped us in April. On the books, we're always going to have to highlight this one. This is our best April ever. Still not enough to pay the bills because April we're normally closed. But at the time, we also applied to every grant, SBA, et cetera. Not thinking we were going to get it, we finally got funded in all of our grants and SBA come mid-May. May 4th, we were able to open. on a limited basis. Since it's just Lisa and I, we went ahead and did it, and that's normally earlier than we ever open. And so June is actually looking to be normal business numbers. We are open for visitors and guests, and right now we're dealing with a supply chain issue, and product is going to be unknown as far as what's going to happen long term. So I mentioned the emotions, and it's been, you know, from one minute we thought we were just going to have to shut everything down to now it's like, okay, we might have a busy summer. How are we going to have inventory and whatnot? This is our website. And part of that pivoting, we really focus back onto the website. And that's really what we're seeing here locally is restaurants. Every business has had to go on online. And we've heard online for a long time before, and everyone had a presence. But when you're dealing with a small community, it's all in person. So online, people get information, but now it's everyone wants to be able to order. Sorry, there's a truck going by, so I'm going to pause for 1 second. Speaking of which, that's a restaurant truck. Our restaurants are now open 50%, and so they're getting deliveries. So restaurants are expected to be online. We're expected to be online. People are shopping with us for delivery, for pickup, for coming in. So because there's different risk levels here. So that's just our website. That's kind of how we are targeting it, is that this, we're doing everything we can. I went through that really quickly. And the reason is that I would rather go, a lot of the questions that Greg gave me fall into what I could have covered. And I thought we could get into Q&A a little quicker, Greg, than we thought. So is there anything you wanted me to cover more on with that, Greg, before we go into questions? But by the way, this is my wife, Lisa. This is what summer will look like in July. It's one of the most famous mountain bike trails, probably in the country, or it's called 401, if not in the world. So that's why we choose to do business in a very challenging tourism-based economy. So.
No, that was good. I think we can jump into the Q&A stuff and start going a little bit deeper on some of those.
Okay.
So I have a question for you. So in your purview into retail as an industry, what do you think folks got right and got wrong about this immediate response to the pandemic and how they reacted?
You know, that's a, you know, I'm not sure at the, you know, retail had no time. Well, no one had any time to plan. And so some things that I saw, and I'm going to relate to Patagonia quite a bit just because that's our main vendors. They were first to shut down distribution, all their retail, and protect their people. They are a privately owned company, not publicly traded. So they did not, they can look at other values versus just the bottom line. So they had some outbreaks, so they shut everything down. You know, looking back, I think we should have been able to shut down, retail early. But it's really a reactionary, and, you know, like I mentioned, you know, there's, everyone had a different phase based on who was sick and where. So I think what people did get right is those ability to have pickup. Like Denver couldn't even have retail pickup. We were able to. So here locally, other retailers, we just went immediately to pickup and delivery model. So those that were able to do that, I think did it right. As far as wrong, I think waiting to, you know, and it gets into the political divide, but waiting to close down really put pressure on others to stay open longer.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. So you started to touch upon this other point too during your presentation, but since kind of the dot-com boom of the late 90s, there's been this push and pull between online versus brick and mortar, and how the brick and mortar experience has evolved and changed, and the experience right. that you're trying to create for customers. How do you start to define a retail experience in a post-COVID world, like as we're moving forward now?
You know, there always needed to be an online culture, but our underlying what we could do well and not beyond others is that in-person experience. So now really, I think the pressure is going to be for any businesses is how do you cross-channel, maintain your one's experience across all those channels. So, you know, if I'm walking into a restaurant, my experience, you know, if I want to order online and get delivery is the same as if I was walking into the restaurant for sit down service. So I think the push and pull is the other aspect is that what we're really seeing is maybe it's because our tight knit community is consumers want to support small and local even more now more than ever. You know, I just saw backcountry.com hired a new CEO from fast fashion world. And I question that because I'm not sure. I think they need to be looking at how to connect on the more intimate level than it is, you know, dealing with Amazon. Amazon's always going to be there. We're not in a market to compete on price. All of our partners don't allow, we all have to abide by the same rules. So I just see it even more so that you just got to storytell across all channels because people are going to be looking at it. And that was coming before this. I think this just accelerated it. We'll talk with, you know, brands from North Face to Patagonia to all of these. We're looking at how, you know, as a consumer that you're going to come in and touch the website, you might come in to touch at a brand, a company owned store, but you might go buy that at a local retailer. So how do you use those channels? And if you don't focus on telling your story across all those channels, then you have a gap. Cause it's coming down. It's not all about price anymore. It's about, you know, longevity of owning something. So.
Yeah. You started to break into that a little bit about consumers wanting to support the local business and their shopping habits reflecting that. Are there any other changes that you're seeing to customers and their behaviors in retail and how they're connecting with retailers from COVID at all?
You know, it's kind of too early to tell. We're all on a day to day, but I will say it's expected that everything we have online. And so for the small retailer, that's a challenge. We'll go to the bike industry. The bike industry is at an all-time high. There are no bikes in the supply chain. There's a company called Smart E-Tailing out there that has really helped turn people or small bike stores that don't have the capacity or the technical ability to be online to now offer pickup and delivery for bikes. So Trek Bicycles does that through their stores too. So I think the expectation is that it's pretty segmented, I think, between consumers expecting online to be different than in store. Now I think they're expecting to be all the same. And how you translate that is really tough. But, you know, it's being super responsive on Facebook Messenger for chat. People are contacting us all the time on that. You got to use all the channels from direct messaging on Instagram to phone calls to, so it's a lot more segmented to make a sale. So it takes that customer service aspect of it.
Yeah, you talked about kind of two things in your last two answers there. There was that.
Sorry.
in a good way, the e-tailer and bikes and how the smaller shops have had to evolve rapidly to meet the demand right. as well. So how that was definitely accelerated by COVID and the changes that we've seen there. Are there any other trends or adaptations that have accelerated businesses now that they've had to implement these sort of rapid changes to their model or to how they reach customers, and that's actually helped a lot in how they'll do business moving forward?
Well, I think just the acceleration and expectation has just made digital transformation more than just a buzzword. You know, prior to coming to back to this, you know, after leaving, you know, the small business world, I was working for a small consulting company as an engagement delivery manager called Synergy, and we specialized in delivering digital transformation. So everything from design all the way through app development. For the small retailers and retail segments, there's so many tools out there now that weren't even there 5 years ago. For example, we're now implementing a new tool that is pulling all of the Patagonia catalog for what we have and creating, uploading the images and descriptions onto a website. So we don't have to spend hours doing it. So there's tools and things coming out that I think are seeing impacts like that. Sorry, hold on. Shoveling snow off because it fell off the roof. Apologies on that. I just think that it's, as a whole, the wins and successes will be those that quickly adopt new technologies, new ways of thinking, and are really, really nimble. And that's where small retailers have an advantage, is that those of us that can think quickly on our feet, you know, are able to. But as far as trends and what, how people are going to engage, right now we're in a mode of everyone wants to help everyone. I worry about, you know, economic fallout in the next 3 months. You know, will we be forgotten? You know, we're selling things you don't really need, you know. And so, however, on the flip side, getting outside is even more important. So companies that are focused on getting outside, we are getting ready for the biggest impacts on public lands here locally, because people aren't traveling. So, man, I'm talking in circles, but I don't know how to answer that directly.
No, that's good. I think you touched on at least the adaptability and the creativity of small retailers to adapt to the space. Maybe I think what does that mean, really? If I'm a small retailer in my hometown, like, what does that mean for me to be adaptable and to be creative with my model beyond just, all right, let me throw my stuff online?
You got to do more than just, you know, put it online. You got to connect through all the channels and really storytelling has been a buzzword in the business world for a long time, but you got to have a compelling reason for you, Greg, to engage with Chopwood Mercantile. And for us, you know, I can't speak for others. It's, people want to know what's happening in Crested Butte. They're stuck at home in quarantine and they want to be in the mountains. And we live in it's our duty to not flaunt that we live in an amazing place, but show that we're still here for you to visit. And people are quickly changing what their values are. You know, more time with family, more time with friends, more time, you know, connecting. And that goes back to how consumers are going to, I think, engage with businesses. So it comes down to connection. You know, we're, you know, and for the audience on here, you know, I have friends that are engineers that are doing engineers for big architecture projects in mountain towns, building amazing huge houses and businesses, you know, specializing in, from one friend that I boat with, they specialize in designing all the systems, you know, air conditioning, water and whatnot for big projects around the world, you know, breweries, et cetera. My other friend does a lot of specialty engineering for complex houses, you know, multi-million dollar builds. And, you know, at first they were worried about their business, and there still might be, but they're actually getting more demand because, right or wrong, people are wanting to get out of the city and be elsewhere. And so for us, I think small town USA is going to have a resurgence. I just hope that it can be in a positive way.
So. Yeah. Yeah. You brought up in that answer the idea of storytelling and how critical that is to sort of showcasing and keeping your customers connected to Crested Butte and the environment there. That really speaks to the bigger role that brand has to play in retail. And I'd love to kind of dive a little bit into your thoughts around sort of the power of brand and its, what does it take to build a strong brand, and how do you as a brand communicate with your customers in a way that they're looking to you for that kind of information as that expert or the right. that source for info?
Well, Chapwood Mercantile, we have our own brand and developing and evolving, and that was been the tenet of what we built this, on. And we did have a, full-time marketing manager. We've had a number of different things that people have moved on, but what we were setting up was trying to be a team that had ownership, felt they had ownership, not in the physical sense, but in the, that they cared for it and tended to it as they would their own. And we're developing, evolving. And basically, when someone steps into our store, we want them to have experience 900 square foot of unexpected products. So people come back to us because we're called a mercantile. We have random things next to each other. Of course, we sell axes because we were asked to. Our name's Chopwood Mercantile. We did that first. But we've got axes next to, a Patagonia Puffy next to Stetson hats. And so then we have ourselves, and this can be a challenge for small company. Lisa is, my wife is the forefront of the store, and everyone expects her to be there. And so she is really the front facing person of the store, but that can translate across to any organization that your customer facing people need to have that customer service and that passion, for the brand and not just, and create those connections. So it doesn't matter if you're a plumber or a welder or anything, as long, the companies that I like to engage with, we have that power of personal connection. And I feel that the current COVID world is driving that. The current state we're in is that, so as a brand, I think the brand comes down to your people. Your people are your brand. And, we have a responsibility to uphold those as an employee or as an owner. Part of issue standing, and I wasn't quite clear on this part, but the elephant in the room with going on with Black Lives Matter, we really stopped and paused with what happened last week, and we didn't put a stance out because we wanted to be able to listen and take it all in, because we can't alienate. We have a wide breadth of people's opinions that come in here. So as a brand, you need to also take a stance on if you're going to be really political. Patagonia, one of our partners, is amazingly, is putting up a fight for public lands and keeping access. And they're doing it at the risk of sales. Whereas we're small, we have our stances, but we try to do it in a more centering way. So, we came out with a message, and I don't have my Instagram up here, but it's from a few days ago. And it basically showed getting outside, that we listen to what's going on, getting outside. We're all about inclusion, and focusing it on trying to imply, and it's hard to do sometimes, but everyone needs to get outside and figure out where their stance is and really listen instead of react. So I believe that, taking a stance on an issue, what we've decided is to not react and not be dividing. So I see there's a question that came up.
Cool. From Alexis, which question is, with transitioning the technology, do you think a lot of small businesses that are owned by older generations will decline and diminish because they can't keep up with it?
That's a valid question. I don't even think it's about older generation. I think it's there's a lot of technology out there. And so that's a really tough question. I hadn't really thought of that. I'll just bring it back here personally. I mean, I see businesses here that I just want to go help because I can put up a website quickly on Squarespace in an afternoon. I hope that those in that situation can ask for help, because locally here we've had people with our Chamber of Commerce, with the university, you know, we have an outdoor MBA program here that are looking to help businesses to learn. And so I do think that there are businesses that can get left in the dark. That being said, there's something about finding a small business in a off back road that doesn't have an online presence too. So I'm really conflicted in that, messaging. You know, there could be, there's a hardware store in Boulder called McGuckin's. It's ginormous. They have a ton of staff and they have everything from rubber chickens to literally, you can go ask for a rubber chicken, they'll have a rubber chicken. McGuckin's is all about high touch customer service. So, you know, I think that yes, there's an ability to have our story be told without online. I just think it's at a disadvantage for some people. So I hope they don't decline or diminish, or I hope they have an exit strategy that brings in some help. You know, so engaging, having a, in the outdoor industry, there most owners don't have a exit strategy, and that needs to be a critical part of that. An exit strategy can be having, you know, elevating a manager to help bring the business up. So I tend to get long-winded, I'm sorry, but that's a great question, Alexis. I appreciate that.
Great. We had another question come in, and actually similarly with that question, I had a question in my own mind as well, so I'll kind of ask them both together. AJ asks, do you think that a lot of small businesses may begin to take an outdoor market approach? And then to piggyback on AJ's question there, I would add the retail space as a whole, like, so you take your store that's in a circa 1800s building. Are you now reevaluating the layout of a space post COVID and how you actually build the store itself?
So, interesting. We have something that was very heated, and everything that happens in this town has a lot of passion. Our one-way street, or I mean, sorry, two-way street main drag is going to become a one-way street hybrid model where businesses in front are able to use the parking to be outside. And that's because restaurants are 50% capacity here, 6 feet distancing. Some people wanted, some people didn't. They didn't really go to one of the ideas thrown out was turning it to a full pedestrian mall because we have no parking. So parking gets pushed into, you know, off-street parking, or I'm sorry, on-street parking with within the neighborhood. So one of the downsides here is that they weren't allowing tents, so it tends to thunderstorm every afternoon. And so most retail isn't going to be using it, but they are allowing, they've loosened laws to allow brick in front. So yeah, I think retail will be utilizing outside space more as they can. For our store personally, we have it doesn't work with our space. And then to your question, Greg, our building's great. We have a front door, back door, and a lot of open space, so air flows through it. But yeah, you got to, you know, from the science of it, keeping airflow moving is critical. So I do think you need to lay it out differently. I'm sure they're doing it there, but a lot of one-way aisles in the big, you know, grocery stores and things like that. And just not congregating. I did go into a hardware store the other day locally, and it was so busy, I actually got nervous. And I'm not super paranoid, but it was like, wow, there's too much stagnant going on. So yes.
All right, we got a couple more questions popping in the chat here. Do you think small businesses could benefit from becoming more active on social media and using Craigslist or eBay to reach customers?
I would stay away from Craigslist and eBay. But yeah, I think that using all of your channels, you know, we don't do Twitter or Snapchat. It's not really our customer base, but there's so much out there that you can do, different apps that you can spread your message across all channels, that for us, it's our most engagement is when we're not trying to sell a product. So our best hits are when we don't have anything by this hat. It's picture like I showed you at the end of, you know, of mountain biking or myself with the horses. So Connor, to answer your point, you know, Craigslist, I haven't even been on that for a long time. So, or eBay, I know a lot of small retailers do put their clothes out on eBay. I think that's a great channel. You know, we're on Shopify and they do have an eBay module. We haven't had to go there just because we don't, we actively manage our supply chain such that we don't have to. So yeah, I think that, you know, I did remove TikTok the other day. I was watching it too much. So I don't know that TikTok's a sale point for us, but I was getting sucked into TikTok. No, I don't dance. So.
Great. So we got another one related to online. Yeah. So there's obviously populations that of individuals that have limited access to the internet or simply avoid going online. Are there creative methods for reaching those communities or that retailers can to take advantage of? Or is online kind of required to be a business now?
Gosh, you know, at first I didn't know how to answer this, and then my head started turning really quickly. You know, I've spent a lot of time in big cities from LA to Phoenix and a lot of the neighborhood, you know, and unfortunately I've been privileged. So I'm always in the up and coming gentrification neighborhoods. And so I'm not sure if this is where the question's going, but you know, those neighborhood communities and big cities of what I've seen and why we were going to try to put an outdoor retail store in a big city was going to be in a neighborhood focus. So pedestrian access, you know, historic districts are coming around. I feel like the community aspect applies big time in big cities. So how to reach those people is, you know, through different pop-up fairs, through local zines. You know, we have here in Gunnison County, we still have a free mailer that comes out that's just all classifieds. And sometimes those are the best ads to find out what specials are going on for restaurants or local specials or things like that. So I do believe that, you know, you can reach out just by networking and, you know, using your sphere of influence. So first by providing great customer service, and then people that read, you know, that word spreads. I think we all know those restaurants that have a wait to get in and you can't get into it and there's no advertising going on. And that's just because they're providing a great product that people love. So I think it, no matter what you do, all these channels, if you don't have an underlying sense of storytelling and customer service and connection, you, it doesn't matter how much you market.
I'd love to shift gears for a second here, given yep. your history in the bike industry and our shared enjoyment of it. But it's clearly seen this massive resurgence with COVID and people looking for it as both leisure, last mileage change. You might be a little bit more closer to the bike industry than I am, but we'd love to hear your thoughts on sort of the bicycles as a response to the need for mobility. Especially in these times where people are trying to get outside more or maybe haven't been on bikes in years or something like that. And, yeah.
You know, the bike industry as a whole, it's definitely the sub $2,000 bikes that are sold out now. You cannot get a bike anywhere. E-bikes, pedal assists, town bikes, I see as a major. I mean, if I was in a city, I would have, you know, an urban e-bike to do all my first of all, you don't have to deal with parking. You don't have to pay for parking. You can get around quicker. So I do think, I do hope that they don't just go in garages and collect, that we can have a shift that people see, especially in LA and these big cities, that, you know, it's amazing to have clean air. And if we just do one last car trip, you know, the, many of these Western cities do not have the public transportation infrastructure like you guys do on the East Coast. And it's really hard to take a train or a bike, I'm sorry, a train or a bus anywhere in LA. Phoenix, I know they're quite well. Phoenix has a network of a growing light rail, an amazing bike network. It does get really hot. Yeah, I just see this as a time. It goes back to getting outside and resetting priorities. And I do hope that the bicycle, you know, even if we can take a little bit of what they do in Holland, you know, I spent time in Holland where there's a stoplight for cars and a stoplight for bicycles, and they're totally different. So, you know, city planning, making sure those bike lines are in there. And, you know, I, if anyone on here is into city planning as part of the schooling, I would look at Phoenix, because it's a car dominated town, but they've made an amazing network of bike lanes. You can commute anywhere by bike. So
is there do you have any Holland and Crested Butte both are places that have embraced cycling? What advice would you give to a city that, like, we've had a couple cities just outside Boston that recently took advantage of the lack of traffic during the shutdown to actually implement stronger bike lanes and stuff in access to bikes? What recommendations do you have for populations that are need to start embracing cycling, or like how do you build a strong culture around bicycles and their viability as a mode of transportation in a city?
Wow. I have GIS public planner friend in Washington, DC. And, you know, they go by bike all the time. But, you know, it's coming down to, you know, in your local community, what I can do is make sure that bike lanes are thought about on any new or redevelopment of roads and lanes and safe bike routes. You know, Google has a bike routing that works pretty well. So yeah, I don't have a great answer, but I just think that making sure locally that bikes are thought about as not just a hobby. You know, Crested Butte, we're a mountain bike destination. So, and there's townies everywhere that aren't locked up, and people come to town and like, why do you have all these old bikes and why aren't they locked up? And while they're actually collectible cruisers and things like that, and we just don't have to lock them up. But, you know, we're kind of in a fantasy island up here. It's a small town. It's not really practical, but, you know, I just think, you know, any development and any activism that you can get into to make sure a bike lane is there is critical.
Great. All right. Nothing new in the chat. Wanted to open it up to the crowd. If Anikatran, Monique, or if any of the students have questions they want to chime in on.
I just had a comment. Thank you, Travis, for your insights and for sharing the information about how your business has evolved. It's really interesting, especially for somebody who has no business background whatsoever. I found, and this is not a question, more a comment, I live in a small town north of Boston, and I found all of a sudden businesses sort of reached out to me as a customer in a different way. Not just marketing their stuff, but offering, all of a sudden the local brewery offered things that people couldn't get, like flour or gloves. And so when you pick up your food, you could choose some of those other things that you might be missing. And they would, the messages on Facebook and social media were much more about how can we help you, which of course is still, they wanted to make, you know,
right,
make money with it. But I'm looking at them much more fondly, and I found like it was really inviting to try to do this pickup thing that seemed complicated because they had reached out. If they hadn't reached out, I would have just been like, oh, maybe I just don't need to buy a bunch of stuff right now. And, you know, I'll just come back when it's all back to normal. But they made it really easy. And there's flyers out there on the telephone poles, and there's Facebook posts. Yeah. And so it's stuff all over, you know, different formats that different people can access. And I see all of it for some reason. I seem to, you know, do the non-digital and the digital, but it really made a different connection. I think I'm shopping more happily here now than I ever did. So I thought that was interesting.
I mean, that's a great point. I didn't touch on it at all. We had that huge amount here everywhere, from the brewery offering hot water to wash your dog because people couldn't go to the dog wash, and to local business owner she's very passionate, owns two restaurants. She started, some people started buying pizzas. Her secret stash, Kylina, I would look that up, her up. She started offering free food for people because we're such a service oriented, and literally lost 3 weeks of some of the busiest time for the people at our service industry. 72 days now, she's had donations, and everything from, you know, take and bake, you know, make your own pizza to full meals. And then she started a farmer's market working with her vendors, Cisco and things like that, to get food. So yeah, no, I fully agree. Personally, what we did is, you know, I struggle with that, and it's like, what can we do? We've been handing out people the need. I don't know if I can, it's called a buff. I wear it. This is my face covering. But it's basically a neck gaiter. They're buffs. They're all over. So we've had those and we've been handing them out. But in the time of need, when people were sick, like so many people were sick here, we just offered to run errands because we lived in Gunnison, 25 miles away. What can we bring you up? So valid point that I think is huge that you brought that up. Thank you.
When I was reviewing the questions I sent to you beforehand and realized I skipped over one that I wanted to highlight. You touched on Patagonia's immediate response and how they shut down and put the employees of their companies, employees of theirs safety right first. Can you maybe take us behind the curtain a little bit on some of those conversations you had with distributors and the companies that you stock for, and that, like, what did that look like in that back and forth of like, well, we haven't decided if we're shutting down, or we're getting product to you, or is...
So, you know, and this comes from my days at working at Trek and Niner. The first thing I did is when we knew we were going to be shutting down is I emailed all of our credit reps and said, I will not be able to pay our bills. So, are you there? Okay, you locked up. So that's the first thing I did. Patagonia just immediately said, we'll figure this out as we go. A couple other brands, they weren't willing to help. So I immediately went to the rep and was like, hey, can we go off price on this? We're normally not supposed to go off price. We just got this inventory in. I want to be able to stay current. Now the current talks with Patagonia being our largest supplier is they're looking at what they're going to be able to get for fall. Spring was kind of already coming. But they definitely had supply chain interruptions. And so it's just ongoing conversations of, what's this look like? You know, normally our buying cycle is we start looking at things now to be delivered next February, March, and June. So our buying cycle is being turned upside down. And so it's an ever evolving conversation. You know, small brands, I think we don't have any answers because no one knows, but I think we're on a trend nationwide that there is going to be a lack of product in anything in the next, you know, 2 to 6 months, just because of the disruptions in shipping. And, you know, it comes down to, even, it doesn't matter if it's made in Mexico or the US or wherever, there's a backlog of products that were already made that need to get delivered. And then there's the backlog of people that can't pay for things. So knowing supply chain, the conversations are just, it's just active, and we, you know, just do the next right thing and the best we can. So I don't have a good answer. It's just, but behind the covers for Patagonia, it's, you know, they did some things I don't fully agree. But luckily we got some SBA funding and can handle it. We had to prepay 30% of their dealers. We had to prepay to ship. Whereas normally we have a 90 to 120 days to pay for something. We have this fund, so we're able to get the product in where other dealers might not be able to get the product in. So disruption is key. The bike industry I'm hearing is total chaos. You know, that tire, you can't get that tire to make that bike, and people, they're sold out. So that's even worse. So there were shops that were able to stock up on inventory early and are an advantage. And so it's just kind of the nature of the business. So
yeah, so those supply chain issues feel like, or it's almost like we should check in with you in 2 months and get an update on really the fallout, because it feels like that's where a lot of challenges and maybe opportunities too are gonna start to come out from what we're still kind of going through it right now anyway, so it's not over by any means.
I'm passionate about food sources, and you know, our local farmers, they're not necessarily here. We have local ranching and local beef production, but we, you know, just over the hill, an hour and a half, 2 hours away, we have tons of produce, fruit, and things like that. And it's like Palisade Peaches, Colorado, is known next to Georgia for their peaches, and they're sold everywhere. And there was a freeze, but local farmers, or so there might be an issue with those peaches, but local farmers as a whole, are seeing uptick, CSAs, local meat sources, things like that. So I think the benefit and the kind of theme of this is that we're all, or many people are pivoting and looking at local sources and connection. So I see there's a question from Samuel, but, you know, it leads to that less of a question, more of a hope that after months of being forced to be home alone, buying things online, that after people will feel a much greater urge to connect with the community, whether through shopping at local stores, biking, rather than driving or spending time. And that's, yeah, get to know your local farmer, get to know your local brewer, that, you know, I just think it's more critical than ever. So I'm actually more excited. A month ago, you would have asked me, and I was doom and gloom and ready to go back to project management in a big city, but now I'm more reinvigorated to be passionate. And we're looking at ways that we can do our business different, because, you know, I do struggle with selling things that people don't necessarily need. So that's something that, yeah.
No, this was awesome. We're pretty much out of time here, but I wanted to just say thank you again. We wish you all the luck in the world, and please tell Lisa I said hi, and we wish you both the best.
Cool.
And just really appreciate you sharing your story.
Yeah, and if anyone has any questions, Travis at chopwoodmercantile.com, happy to answer. I'm involved with the incubator and the college down here, so this was not, when you asked me to do it, I love it. So I don't know that my stuff is any helpful other than that I keep throwing myself out there and trying. So, yeah.
Well, a big message we communicate to all of our students is build, test, iterate, and evolve on those. So, yeah, well, it's a great lesson.
Design thinking is everything. So yeah, doesn't Love matter if that. You're, yeah, yep.
Thank you, Travis. Good to meet you. Thank you so much for being Thank with you. Us.
Yeah, you guys have a great day. I appreciate you guys all.
Thanks a lot. Enjoy the snow.
It's getting warmer, but anyway, thanks.
Bye-bye.